My name is Daniel, and I'm very, very excited today for our fourth episode of Pawning Nails. And with me today is my very talented producer, Jamie.
Hello.
And my star, Lenny.
Really?
Yeah. I thought I was a star.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And with us today is a very, very special guest, Ellie Honing. Ellie is an expert in, Ellie, why don't you tell the folks exactly what it is that you're an expert in?
Well, I spent 14 years as a federal prosecutor in Manhattan and then, 14 years as a prosecutor, first as a federal prosecutor in Manhattan and then as the head of criminal justice here in New Jersey. So,
oh, you worked in New Jersey, huh?
Yeah, I'm a Jersey guy.
How old are you when you started with the Manhattan District?
29 years old, which is a little scary because when you think about...
You look
I'm 44 now.
Born in Camden.
Yes, born in Camden. But here's the thing. When you make someone a prosecutor, and I had this experience at the AG's office, you are giving them a mighty powerful tool. You're giving them and you're giving them the ability to really mess with people's lives and to do a lot of good and also a lot of damage. And to think back and think that they gave me that when I was 29 years old.
I know.
Thank goodness I had good supervision and a good network around me because it takes a couple years before you sort of develop your instincts and your chops and know how to do things the right way, aggressive, but also fair. But yeah, I started at 29 years old.
One of the reasons why I jumped at the opportunity when Lenny told us that he knows you and
I
he
don't
could come
know,
on this.
But I'm...
Well,
mutual friend.
Mutual friend is, as you know, Lenny's been in hot waters before, and Lenny and I like to talk about the law here, and it's very refreshing to have somebody with your type of pedigree that could come forward and maybe debunk or kind of talk about some of the things. And based on your pedigree, it sounds like you have a lot of experience. And what are you doing right now? What is your current profession?
So I'm doing a couple things. I'm teaching at Rutgers University, where I went for undergrad. I'm working at a law firm in North Jersey, and I work as a legal analyst for CNN.
So what's the name of the firm you're
working
at?
Three things. Lowenstein Sandler.
Lowenstein Sandler, right. Yeah. Very, very famous.
Good firm. Yep.
Right. So you're doing three things, and are you a paid analyst on CNN?
Yeah. I'm signed. I have a contract,
You like it?
I'm a signed contributor. It's fantastic.
You look like that. How can you not be on TV?
No, please. It's a thrill. I mean, the thing I love about the work for CNN is you get to talk about issues that are happening now. I mean, the news. We happen to be in this moment where we're having this historic legal event of the impeachment going on in the investigation.
But that's not your thing. You're a criminal expert.
Oh, no. I talk about impeachment all the time. I mean, the relevancy is this is all a big investigation. I mean, Robert Mueller was a big criminal investigation. So I think I was able to bring viewers sort of inside. Here's what they're talking about inside the prosecutor's office. Here's what they're going to do next. Here's what this means in court. And now it's sort of morphed into a congressional investigation. But again, the strategies that you use when you're investigating a crime or some kind of violation of the Constitution, they're similar. So I think one thing I try to do is bring viewers inside that trial room. What are the prosecutors talking about right now? What are they worried about? What's the strategy? What's the play here?
And when you were at the prosecutor's office, you're, from what I understand from the basic research, you weren't a political crimes guy. You were...
My primary thing was organized crime and mafia.
There were
times when we had a little bit of overlap with some low-level public officials, so I did end up doing a couple of corruption cases.
Right, but your main thing is organized crime,
I spent the majority of my time at the Southern District of New York doing organized crime, Cosa Nostra, Five Families, New York... mob families, primarily Gambino and Genovese families.
Right.
Lenny,
what do you got?
Were you like ever afraid for your life?
That's a great question. It's a question I get all the time. The short answer, Lenny, is no. Here's why. So one of the mob rules, right, when you get your finger pricked, when you become a made member, they give you the rules. Now, footnote, these are all mobsters. So they only listen to the rules to a certain extent. But like no drug dealing is one of the rules. No messing around with another member's relative is another rule. But one of the rules is don't mess with judges and prosecutors. And there's a reason. It's bad business, right? I mean, look, if the rule was if you killed me...
They're going to get another prosecutor.
Exactly.
What's the difference?
If the rule was if you kill me,
the case goes away,
I'd be dead 100 times. But if they did something to me... They plug in the next guy. And all hell would rain down on them. So, I mean, I can't think of – I know it's happened, but it's been decades and decades since any mafia
– It's just part of the business. They just see it as part of the business, right?
Yeah,
it's an expense.
Right. And the other thing is, like, I don't know how much this had to play with it, but I never made it personal as between me and the people I prosecuted. I always treated people – and John Gotti Jr., who I prosecuted, has done interviews since, and he's confirmed this. He said, look, he handled the case. He fought hard, but – of me, he said, but he treated me with respect, and, you know, it's business. It's not personal.
It's nice that you brought up that case. It's a very interesting case. I read your bio, and Most people don't know this, but you're actually, you can correct me because this is one of our first times meeting, but you are known for losing the John Gotti Jr. case.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, come on, it's a loss. Lenny, no. What do you play baseball? You have mistrials.
Lenny's right. It was a hung jury, but it's a loss. I mean, there's no question. Right? So yeah, look, there's a long story about that.
We're here to listen.
Yeah. So, well, look, I tried a whole bunch of cases, but Gotti, of course, was the biggest name. And this is Junior, so we're clear. When people talk about Gotti, I'm like, God, you know, when you hear that name in lyrics, they're mostly talking about the father, Senior. He was the guy who orchestrated the famous hit at Sparks Steakhouse in Manhattan in 85 or something like
Sparks.
That. Right? It's a little overpriced.
The guy started with a C. He took out the mobster.
Castellano. Yeah. So Senior's the one who basically ran this coup. They took out Castellano in Sparks Steakhouse. They had the guys with the fedora, like the Russian hats, do the hit so they couldn't tell who did it. And then John Gotti Sr. became the boss, and he then became a tabloid sensation. He's on the front page of the Post and the Daily News and walking into the social club with a lot of fanfare. That was the guy who was sort of the legendary figure. Junior took over as the street boss when his father went to jail, I want to say 89 or 90 or something like that. And Junior wasn't quite...
For the media purposes, was he really directing things?
So Junior was taking orders from his dad in jail. But look, he wasn't that respected in the streets. On the streets, he was seen as... He got this gig because his dad, right?
Lenny and I call it the Lucky Sperm Club.
Yeah, but
Sperm Club.
No, but how was he taking orders from
dad?
Jail?
I just want to be a dancer.
All the phones are tapped.
Yeah, he would have meetings with his dad in person.
Would he fly to Colorado?
Yeah, Marion. I think it was in St. Louis or something
No, I think he was in Superman.
Eventually, he was in Colorado, I think. I forget exactly where it was. But look, there's a famous video. The U.S. Attorney's Office, before I was involved in the case, was wiretapping some of those meetings, was recording some of those meetings. And of course, Junior was smart enough to play for the cameras. He knew he was being.
It's amazing what they can pull off in jail.
I've seen people pull off. You name it, and they will find a way to get it into jail or get the message
jail. To Junior.
Yeah.
So were you assigned the case in MIXT? Because I'm running through the timeline. You said you're 44. That's 15 years ago you started with them. We're in 2009, so we're talking 2006, 2005.
Right.
He already had a few stints in jail. There was that famous picture where he's wearing like sweatpants and hanging out. You know the picture,
of course.
And he's already been a few merry-go-rounds. You're getting the case. You're young. Is it one of those things where like they say to you, listen, we know he's doing something. Go get it.
No.
Or there's actual evidence and you have to – because the point of this podcast is we take the headlines and we break them down to the realities of what happened. And we don't have John Gotti Jr. here yet, but I've always wanted to – it's something that I've always thought about and it's always bothered me about – where is the media sensational aspect of it, and where is the criminal? Because this man is not a criminal, and that's where I want to hear from
him. He certainly was at one point, and he would I think, admit that. But let me give you the background. Junior was tried 3 times by my office when I was brand new. I had nothing to do with those. I was in my first, second year of the office. This is like 05, 06, something like that. All 3 times the jury hung, meaning they couldn't come to a unanimous verdict each way. My office then dismissed it. Fast forward 4 or 5 years. By this point, I've become an established OC, organized crime prosecutor. I've gotten some other convictions, including of some Jersey-based mob guys. I've done a murder case by this point. The Middle District of Florida, so Tampa, flips a new witness, this guy John A. Light. They are convinced he's going to make the case against Junior. They charge him down there. I sent them some transcripts. I sent them some evidence. I was like, good luck, guys. Go get him. You know, God bless. First move Junior makes, though, is to transfer the case back to New York. He wants to get back to the same courthouse where he had success before. I remember the FBI agent was like, he'll never succeed. He's got no chance. And I was like, good. And then 2 weeks later, it was motion granted. He's coming back to New York. So it lands on my desk.
Who is his lawyer?
Charlie Carnese. He actually passed away a couple months ago.
Oh, that sucks, because that's a good lawyer right there.
Charlie's really good. Charlie's like right out of Central Casting, so I assume most listeners don't know who he is or was. He's a rotund guy, right? He's bald.
What does that mean, rotund? I didn't go to Harvard.
Heavy guy. Short, heavy guy.
I barely went to high school. So we go back to this thing. So he gets transferred. So you're saying, without saying it, you said it. It wasn't your case. It was Florida's case.
I'll say that. It was not a case I charged. Yeah. When it landed on my desk, I went, oh, boy. I mean, look, trying a case for the fourth time, and the jury, when
and this is federal, right? Federal is known as what? How much percentage of convictions does the federal government have, realistically?
Oh, 96? I mean, of all cases, high 90s, but high 90s, of trials, right? I would say.
I'm one of them.
Yeah. Of trials, over 80% of trials. But here's the complication in this case. It's his fourth time, and the jury knows it. The jury's been told it. And when we talked to the jury afterwards, it was a 6-6 split. Six of them said he's guilty, he should be convicted. The other six said, you can't try a guy four times.
What's a crime? What was the crime?
So there was a whole bunch of it was racketeering. He was charged with a whole bunch of extortions. I don't remember if there was there was gambling, loan sharking, but there were several murders that we charged him with directing, with ordering other people in the family to do. But look, those largely just came down to the word of one or, you know, one and a half type witnesses. But he made the defense. The defense he made was not, I didn't do any of this stuff. The defense he made was what lawyers call withdrawal, meaning I left. I quit that mob family, and I left more than 5 years ago, meaning what we call the statute of limitations. So if the crime ended more than 5 years ago, you can't charge it. And so he argued, I left. He went to jail. He went to jail for tax fraud or something like that in like the late 90s.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he argued, when I went to jail, that was it. I said goodbye, Gambino family. I'm done. I'm out. It's a withdrawal defense. So it was a really...
You were basically drawn dead. Yeah. Like in poker. You know, if you're waiting for a king on the river, no, kings are all out.
It's funny that you say that because I in retrospect, I do feel that way. I mean, look, it was a fair fight, a fair trial.
Do you believe him?
Do I believe that he withdrew? I believe that he partially withdrew.
I think they asked him to leave.
Well, there was that too. But here's the thing. Here's the problem. There definitely was some evidence that he got out. But the thing is, if you're going to withdraw, you have to get completely out. And he was still living off that money, which means you're not out. And there was still evidence that he was directing things, not murders, but still taking money and giving directions after the time he said he was out. So, look, it was not your usual criminal cases. Prosecutor says he did it. Defendant says, nuh-uh. Here it was more like, maybe I did do it. In fact, I think in the opening or closing, Charlie Carnese even conceded. Yes, he was in the mob, but he got out. So it was very unusual.
A part of that is kind of like giving your 2-week notice as a mobster. Like, there's got to be an unwind process. It's not like, I'm out. You know what I mean? There's people's lives that are in danger. You're privy to knowledge. Well, you got to give your boss a 2-week notice. You got to give a 2-week notice or else you're not going to get another job. And most likely your paycheck will be held back.
Right.
And with his instance, look at all this shit that happened.
Yeah, so more than that, there is.
You know what I mean? I kind of think, you know what I mean?
There's got to
be
notice.
An unwind process, right, where you sit people down. You know, like there's a lot that's going on in the background, but a little known fact. So my wife is from Lenny wants to talk, but my wife is from Massapequa.
Oh, okay.
And the Gottis, I'm sure you know, are from Massapequa, Long Island.
Right.
I don't know if you know this.
Yeah, the Queens, Massapequa. Yeah, he lives in Oyster Bay now.
Yeah,
I think.
Oyster Bay. Yeah, yeah. So I saw this house that he lived in, and I was like, this is like really modest house, and the dad was there, and like hit.
Oh,
like,
that he grew up in.
No, he grew up in Queens somewhere, where in the movie they touched up where the murder was, where like, you know, the neighbor killed the son. I don't know.
But his brother got hit by a car, yeah.
And I kind of like, I don't know. I kind of, like I said, I think that John Gotti Jr. was just my opinion, I didn't prosecute, he was just a member of the Unlucky Sperm Club. And what do you think he's doing right now?
It's a good question. I mean, look, I have not seen any indication that I wouldn't know.
But you're not a professional anymore. You're not
I wouldn't know, but as far as I can tell, I mean, look, he has 6 kids.
You're in the private son. And he does entertainment. I know he does a lot of speaking engagements right now.
I've heard him on radio. I know one of his sons.
Let's switch subjects here a little bit. Yeah.
One of his sons, I think, is an MMA fighter who's doing pretty well.
Really?
So, yeah.
Life just goes on.
You love baseball.
Yes, I do.
You love baseball. Okay, so
are you going to test me?
No, I'm going to ask you a question. You know why? I'm going to use your legal. I'm going to use your.
Yeah. What your? I have questions for you too.
Yeah, but I'm going to ask you some from. And I want your opinion as a person that's prosecuted the most powerful people in the world.
Yeah.
And here's a scenario. If, say, Ron Darling.
Okay.
Okay.
Here we go.
If Ron Darling, okay. Yeah, here we go. These are called facts.
Here we go.
If Ron Darling, I want to know if this can become criminal.
Okay.
If Ron Darling, who makes up a bunch of lies in a book, okay, that are proven, okay. And the only way he can stop the beating he's taking from the fans and the beating he's taking fearing losing his job, okay, is to come up with a fake illness, to take a leave of absence and say he's got a medical problem. And then it turns into cancer. If that's proven, remember, he's on TV in front of millions and millions of people every day, an ambassador for the game of Major League Baseball. Mm-hmm. As you know, which their most important thing is the integrity of the game.
Sure.
So the fans then turn on a dime for him because of the pity. And so Ron Darling now, when he gets on TV, they all say, there's that poor Ron Darling, that cancer. What if that was a fraud? What if Ron Darling lied?
Yeah, so first of all, I don't know anything about the facts of this. Right. I'm definitely not signing on to this.
Lenny has an agenda here?
No, I don't have an agenda.
A hypothetical guy.
There's no agenda. I want to hear There's no agenda.
I was a pretty aggressive prosecutor, but I don't see a crime there.
Right.
Whether somebody could sue him civilly, if somebody could A, prove that those things were false, and B, that they were damaged by it, then you could bring
First of all,
you're disagreeing with Lenny.
That's not true. So remember, the most valuable commodity Major League Baseball has is his fans.
Right.
Okay, so Ron Darling, if this is true, I'm not saying it is, if Ron Darling made this lie up and duped and played these fans, okay, and to get out of this and fake cancer, okay, that would be the biggest fraud in the history of professional sports, because it's ongoing, it's not ending, it's ongoing. Every night it goes out there. So what I'm saying is, if there's some consequences, now let's move further. That means the New York Mets knew about it. That means SNY knew about it. If this were true, I'm saying. So where does this go from here?
Well, I'll just tell Nobody you my immediate reaction. Just my gut instinct is, I can't imagine a guy would make up something like that. I don't know Ron Darling. I think he did sign a ball for me in 86 or something. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I don't know Ron Darling. And
this entire project is just to prove that Lenny Dykstra knows that Ron Darling is
lying. That's not true, because if I wanted to do that, I could just show him. I live on facts. So where I'm going with this is, how would you feel as a fan of baseball?
Well, here's the problem. I don't sign on to the premise.
I'm saying if this were proven,
that was ever proven.
That means the New York Mets were involved.
Well, what he's saying to you is it was never proven yet.
No. Yeah, I'm saying if this were proven, remember.
If my grandmother had balls, she'd be my grandfather, Lenny.
Don't make me pull something out and show you everything. Oh, no. Where I'm going with Ellie is this. As a fan of baseball, remember, the New York Mets, had to know that he had cancer, right? So they signed off on it by not going public. That means SNY had to go public. Where I'm trying to go with this is, as a fan, if you're duped and lied to, what are you going to do?
Well,
I'm not saying it's true.
I get the point of your question. See any evidence that's true.
No. I'm saying that if it's true. Right. I'm not saying it is true.
I don't know. I mean, if anything. But
there has to be ramifications, doesn't there?
I guess. Like, if it were probably true. Up to MLB, I'm
are you,
sure, and the Mets.
Are
if
you,
that's true, which, I again, I'd be
are
shocked.
Are you at all, have you ever dealt with any crimes with sports in your dealings? Has it ever?
There was a small piece of the Gotti case that dealt with indirectly. He didn't necessarily do anything wrong, but one of Lenny's former teammates, Keith Hernandez, this is in the papers.
Oh, what happened? Tell me about
this. This was part of the trial record. We had evidence, and by the way, this was part of, I think, the weakness of the case, that we had to go back so far in time. I mean, this happened. So this witness testified that in the early, mid-80s.
You talk about weakness of the case. You're saying that when the stretch of, when the scope of the evidence you have to gather is large, it's a negative thing?
Yes.
Elaborate
and
on that.
Yes.
I think our fans might want to hear about what that means.
The more evidence you have to put in front of the jury and make them understand, the less clean your message is and the harder it is for the jury to understand and accept what you're saying. Also,
that's
the,
interesting.
The farther back you have to reach in time, the less the jury cares, right? If you say this horrible thing happened, then it happened 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Human nature, you go, wow, oh boy. If you go, this horrible thing happened and it happened 25 years ago, people are more like, who cares? But we needed to set a couple of foundations. And we had a witness who was a clubhouse, again, this is all public record. He was a clubhouse attendant for the Mets in the early, mid-80s. And he started placing bets with the mob, with the Gambino family, through a guy who was a Gotti guy. I think it was John Alight, who was our cooperator.
Florida.
Yeah, exactly. The guy I mentioned before from Florida. And this clubhouse attendant testified he got in too deep. He ended up owing $7,000.
You're talking about DeLuca.
DeLuca, yeah. Some amount that he couldn't pay. And he told the guy, he told the Gambino family that he was betting for Keith Hernandez. Falsely. He was not. He testified he actually was not.
Oh,
but he wanted to keep them at bay, and he wanted them to take his action, right? Like, why are they going to take bets from some clubhouse guy? But if you tell them, I'm betting for this guy who makes a lot of money, they're more likely to take it. So he testified he falsely told the Gambino family's these bets are for Keith Hernandez.
Right.
He got in too deep. He actually ended up going to Keith Hernandez.
2009. That was 2009, right?
Well, the trial was 2009. Yeah, this all happened in the early 80s, before you arrived.
So he goes to Keith Hernandez.
He goes to Keith Hernandez, says, I'm in trouble. I need help. I forget how much detail he gave him, but I'm sure Hernandez understood what he was saying. And Keith Hernandez cut him a check. He bailed the kid out. Seven grand. And the kid ended up pocketing it or blowing it in Atlantic City or something. And
really? You don't think it actually was for Keith Hernandez? You don't think there's a part of it
that
like...
He wasn't a better.
He's not a better?
No, he didn't get
See, I was
Lenny,
just,
Lenny, tell me about what Keith Hernandez is like as a person. And tell me about, do you believe this story that he would give $7,000 to someone that really...
He would help somebody, but Keith Hernandez definitely wasn't a part of betting. He didn't bet. That wasn't his thing.
See,
what he did do is
he had sex with Lane.
He taught me how to play baseball right.
And
so he was really the leader of that 86 team with Gary Carter. So that 86 team had a blend of both, but Hernandez is the guy that taught me to play right, and the game's played off the scoreboard. But Hernandez had none of that. That wasn't his style. He was not a gambler. He didn't gamble on anything. So he's a nice guy, though. So
I mean, look,
I could see him loaning the guy $7,000.
He was not a gambler.
So Lenny Dykstra is corroborating my witness right now, which is good. But look, it reflects well, I guess, on Keith Hernandez that he did that.
But Lenny, what was you told me a story. What did Keith introduce you to?
Well, I mean, amphetamines.
Yeah, Keith introduced, but that's part of the game.
But that's
right?
part of the game. I mean, amphetamine is a long way from. Being
I heard Tom Selleck's mustache sued Keith Hernandez's mustache for copyright, 80s copyright infringement. He was just like, "Who the fuck do you think you are? I was the first stash."
It's a good contest. Best
that's
80s
right.
Speaking
stash.
Of Keith Hernandez,
best
80s stash. He's the most uncomfortable guy in the business right now, sitting next to Ron Darling.
Oh no.
Oh, he had to sit in the booth with him?
Oh,
we're
yeah.
back to Ron Darling.
I know.
See,
all roads.
Ellie, I'm telling you, we built this studio just so we can...
So here's the deal. When I talk about something with absolute certainty, when I do, I'm never wrong. Okay? So like when I told the on-deck hitter, I could never tell him, never. I guarantee you I'm going to hit this time.
Right.
You know what? Even though I own the pitcher and I could hit a bullet off, I knew I would,
right.
I might hit it at somebody.
Right.
See? So I can't tell you, but when I, and I'm not saying I can guarantee you this.
Okay.
But what I can say, I can
so
absolute guarantee this.
Are you familiar with Lenny's case of what happened with Lenny?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm interested in that. I mean, I want to hear from Lenny.
I want to hear also
I want to hear about
Lenny.
how it felt for you going through the process. Do you feel that you were fairly treated by the system, and in particular
and what,
by the prosecutor?
Which case? You're talking
that
about?
Case. Okay,
I don't know.
So a lot of I'm gonna lead into this one, but Lenny, I met Lenny here a while ago, and the best parts of why I do the show is because these are the stories of the best. Those 86 minutes, all that shit's been told 100 times
over.
You got to listen to Lenny if we have the time. I mean, you have the time? Can you sit
for a little bit?
Yeah, let's hang in because you'll love it. I mean, this is about, like, okay, so...
Wait, hold on. Let me lead into it.
Go, lead.
Okay, so Lenny at the time had a very large fortune. A lot of the problems with the stories that he says, it's not enough backstory. So let me give you a little bit of backstory, okay? Lenny just finished playing for the Phillies, and he had, at that time, 5 to 6 car washes in Anaheim, in California.
Right.
He had sold the car washes for approximately, and Lenny, you could interrupt. Whenever I say something that's not true, just interrupt, okay?
It was $50 million.
$50 million, yeah, I was about to say. He sold it for about $50 million, you know, settled with about, you know, 30, 40, something like that. And he's rolling good. And he parlays that into something called the Players Club. And this is he will go into a different show about those stories. They're very interesting stories.
That's not criminal.
But now, this is the part where it gets interesting. Now, Lenny takes a loan from AIG.
No, I didn't.
Well, now you have to tell the story. At this point, I step out.
Yeah, because...
But Lenny is doing
AIG
well. He's doing
to do with
everything.
The bottom line is we all know...
There's no bottom line. You have to lead into it, Lenny.
We all know in 08 what happened. The world almost came to an end. Meaning, like there was
the housing market crash in 2008.
There was no liquidity.
Economic. Sure,
and Lehman Brothers. I mean, they were closing down.
Yep.
Like there was no liquidity.
Mm-hmm.
So my bank, who was Washington Mutual, was the biggest banking collapse in the history of banks. My other partner, AIG, the biggest insurance company in the world, was my partner with my magazine. they went bankrupt.
This is a story
so I filed
knows.
A Chapter 11.
Right.
Like our president's filed, he's organized, reorged.
Yeah, yeah.
See, you can't file a 7 unless you have your destitute.
Okay.
So I file an 11 because I have to stop the, you know, about this illegal loan.
Talking to the mic.
Yeah, and the bottom line is I got a corrupt trustee, okay, mm-hmm. who converted me to a 7.
You're missing a lot of details, Len.
No, I'm not. I got to get through it quick. Converted me to a 7, 2 weeks into my 11, without even making a plan. Bankruptcy is like the most boring thing people want to hear about.
Yeah.
It's all about misery. But so this guy and lost.
That's a fact.
So this guy converted me, and on the day he signed, so what happens is my biggest creditor is J.P. Morgan. Okay, mm-hmm. So like you can't manage the Yankees and the Mets, right? So as a lawyer, your biggest,
right.
the number one rule is like conflict of interest.
Right, right.
So like he can't represent J.P. Morgan and me if he's my trustee because they're my biggest creditor.
Okay.
So the day he signed under penalty of perjury that he didn't represent J.P. Morgan, he represented them in 50 cases. How do I know this?
Because mm-hmm.
it's all public record.
Okay.
So what happens is this. This guy was just mowing down my life, everything I worked
on. You
want to
use his name, Lenny?
Yeah, his name is Arturo Cisneros.
Yeah.
Okay? And I made him resign. Okay. So and he resigned for reasons because if it went public, judges go down, JP Morgan goes down. So where I'm going with this is the corruption, okay, that I was involved with is unexplainable because here's what happens. So he brings I bought Wayne Gretzky's house.
Right.
The great.
How much did you pay for it?
$18 million. Okay, bought his house. Yeah, yeah, bought his house. But I bought it because look, I'm not the smartest guy. I did get hit.
2009.
I'm smart enough to actually know I'm not smart enough. So like right. when I was going to do this loan, I said to the Washington Mutual guy, here's how it works. Okay, here's the line. Here's what I bring in. I bring in $180,000 a month. Here's what I'm willing to pay, $60,000 a month. Meaning, because I'm pretty good that it works. So if you make me a loan like that, then I'll do it. Mm-hmm. So 3 weeks later, he shows up. Knowing they're going bankrupt, so it's an illegal loan. That was predatory lending was all up. But that being said, what happens is I file the 11, get converted to the 7. This trustee brings Gretzky's house a motion to sell for $9 million.
So this is the part. So I'm in the car with Lenny, and this mm-hmm. is where I have to just take a little break because I don't want him to go too far.
No, but this is where the part gets like.
Well,
good.
Yeah. So I'm in the car with Lenny, and Lenny tells a lot of stories. Some I've heard, some I haven't
Everyone
heard.
Everyone is true.
There's a lot of truth.
No, no, not is, a lot. All true.
This is the part where I'm like, whoa.
So it's all fact. By
so
doc,
what
it's
happened
all
was what happened was the trustee ended
no,
up.
Should let me explain.
Go ahead, Len.
Because the only way it can be explained right is like this way.
Well, it took me 6 times listening to it.
No, no, there's only one way. Go ahead, listen to it once. Okay, so when he brings his motion to sell this house, okay, for $9 million, give it away basically, I call my lawyer and I say, something's crazy going on here. Go on Pacer and see what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
2 hours later, he calls me back. You're not going to believe it. The day he signed letter under penalty of perjury, he represented J.P. Morgan in 50 cases. Subsequent to taking on your trusteeship, he was hired by J.P. Morgan, willfully hired, in 300 new cases as their lawyer. Okay? So now, guess what I have? I have that trustee by the balls. Okay? Because he's going to prison. Because, like, he made $20 million personally from that. So I called him up and I said, listen, Arturo.
What time did you call him?
It was a Friday. I like to call people on Fridays when I want to bury him. Because I said to him early on when he was burning my life down, I said, Arturo, there's going to be a day when you fuck up. And when you do it, I'll be right there. And I'm only going to stick it in, I'm going to break it off. Okay? So that day came. Okay? After, because remember, it's documented. I have every case. So I call him up on a Friday and he says, I don't want to talk to you. What are you talking about? I said, how does this sound? JPM. And it gets real quiet. Okay, I said, that's what I thought. I said, you know what, Arturo? Remember what I told you? I said, that day's here. I said, but you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to think about what I want to do with your life since I own you over the weekend, and we'll figure it out on Monday. So what I do is I tell my attorney, listen, I'm a businessman. I have to take personal out of it. I need liquidity, so I'm willing to give him, keep 10 of the 20 he steals, basically, and let him live. Because remember, when you get caught, you're removed as a trustee. And so how they get this from not going to a trial or going to court is they make him resign. So when he resigns, they don't have to have a hearing, okay? But that being said, the way they stopped me, so I filed a civil suit, and I gave him 10 days to respond. And so my attorney, like, on the 10th day, he said nothing. I said, like, what? He said nothing. He says, what do you want to do? I said, what do you mean? What do I want to serve the motherfucker? What are they going to do, put me in jail? No longer than 10 minutes after he served, I come walking out of my house, and you would have thought they captured Osama bin Laden. I mean, 30 of them come out of trees and handcuff me. And so, by the way, I'm not a pussy. Those handcuffs hurt, by the way.
Let me pick it up there. I'm interested. So,
I told you.
Where did you get prosecuted?
This is all true.
State, federal?
So here's the best part. Then that's a great question. So the state, as you know, plays they're the low people. They wear the Today's Man suits.
Right.
FBI wears the, like, you know, not Armani suits.
No, yeah.
So what happens is they take me down this dark tunnel that they don't tell me where I'm going. And so I'm in there, and I'm going, like, what the fuck's going on? Because I'm not putting it together. Because I never committed a crime in my life. All I did is pay taxes and visit kids in hospitals and hit balls with one to the, you know, at the right place. So in come the two guys with the nice suits, the FBI guys. And I said, what the fuck is going on in here? Like, I'm going crazy. And they said, oh, so, you know, they're very calm FBI guys.
Yeah, sure.
And they say, we're here to talk to you about your bankruptcy. And I said, what the fuck do you want to know about my bankruptcy? It's not on the docket. You treat me like a murderer. They say, before we talk to you, you have to sign this. You know.
Yeah, Miranda, you waived your right to remain silent.
So I looked down. Like. No, I didn't. So I looked down. I'm actually smart enough to know I'm not smart enough. I looked down, and the last line says, you have the right to an attorney. I said, well,
that's it.
See, since I got two fucking FBI agents in here, and I'm in a fucking room right out of Law and Order, I said, I think I'll take that one.
Right.
So they button up and leave, and I say, pussies.
They did the right thing, though, because when somebody says, I want my attorney, that's what you do.
So 3 hours later, I'm in this room. I mean, dark, nasty room. It's a safe place. And in comes a guy with the Today's Man suit.
The state guy.
I said, listen, motherfucker, take me fucking home or put me in jail.
Right.
He says, no problem. I said, oh, thank God. God, I can't believe this. Finally, didn't leave. So we're walking out, but he's walking to the wrong area. He's walking to, like, an area where it says booking up there. I said, well, what are we doing? Where are we going? He says, you're going to jail.
You did give him that option.
I know, you did give him
the
option.
I said, wait, for what?
Because of any ass kicking or the money, but
for what? He said, no charges, you're being detained. Okay? So we have this thing called a constitution.
How many hours were you there?
No, how about days?
You were there?
No one knew where I was for 6 days. They never took me in front of a judge.
In jail?
No one took me in front of a judge. I've been there 6 days, okay? And then they finally say, roll it up, Dykstra, you're out of here. I'm like, oh, my God, thank God. And so now when I walk, the first two people I see are them two FBI agents.
Oh,
they say,
always good
now you're going to federal jail. I said, wait, there's another jail?
There's a lot of them.
I didn't even know there was, like, a state jail and a federal jail.
Yeah, you learn quick, though, right?
There's county ones, too.
Right, and then they say you're being indicted tomorrow.
Yep, okay.
I said, what the fuck's that?
Yep, means charged.
Said, you'll see tomorrow.
What crime? What crime were you indicted for?
You'll see. So he says, you're probably not going to be getting out for a while. So the next morning, some attorney appointed to me, because no one knows where it was. I said, what is this? He says, slides a paper across and said, the United States of America versus Lenny Dykstra.
Federal case.
I started laughing. I started laughing. I said, hold on.
Smart move, Len.
The country, the most powerful country in the world against me? For what? What is the crime? They said bankruptcy fraud.
Okay.
I said, what does that mean?
They
said, well, they say you sold a piece of furniture for $800. That was part of the bankruptcy estate. I said, okay. And they didn't want no bail, this and that. But it all comes back to the fact, remember, circle, bring it back. Mm-hmm.
Cisneros.
It comes back to the fact that not only Arturo Cisneros was going
fucking
down.
Cisneros.
All the judges were going, the judge of 35 years on the bench was going down. Okay, by the way, as you know, correct me if I'm wrong, fraud never ends. I still have the documents. Okay.
What does that mean, fraud never ends?
I don't know what you mean.
Meaning there's no statute of limitations with fraud.
Oh, no, there is.
Well, that's why we have an expert.
Wait, that's what I'm asking.
That's
the whole point.
It varies 5, 7, 10 years, but it goes from whenever the last date of the fraud is. So if you carry out a fraud over 6 years.
No, they've carried out the fraud. They've carried out the fraud forever.
Coming out.
No, but remember, they found a way around the fraud. I have the documents to prove that they committed the fraud.
Well, there is a statute of limitations. But let me ask, so you were prosecuted federally out of California, right?
In California. Well, first, so let's get back to the state one. Because there's two. I was prosecuted in both of them. No.
Okay.
I was so
but it's all because of an $800 piece of furniture.
No. It's all because they're going to jail, dude. Because it's going to the White House because J.P. Morgan willfully hired this guy, knowing that they're breaking the law in 300 cases.
So what did you end up doing with it?
Well, what do you mean what I'm doing? They put me in jail with no bail. I mean, here's
how long were you in jail?
They charged me the state crimes at GTA.
I'm actually surprised, by the way, that they got you locked up with no bail.
I know.
No bail. No, it was 500.
Well, not celebrity.
No, it was 500. First of all, the charge was at GTA saying I used a false financial statement to buy a Ford Flex. That's a state charge.
Okay.
What's a Ford Flex?
A Ford Flex is a cheap car.
It's a car?
$300 a month car.
I thought so too. And then I was like, is this a legal term?
So now they call it
a legal term.
They call it GTA.
I'm going to get some like NJ.com, do you bougie fucks? So you don't know what a Ford is?
They call it a GTA. And so you're getting arraigned. And so usually you get arraigned, they give you. The guy says $500,000, but with a 1270 hold, meaning even if you get the money, you're not getting out because it has to go through tax returns.
Oh, the vetting process.
There's no way out. Okay, so because if I'm out, I could then bring the case public and they're all getting buried. So that being said, the state, now my attorney, okay, that formed this company, the state charged me the GTA saying that the company I bought or leased these cars with, Home Free Systems, was not a company. It was a shell company. It was fake. I said, what are you talking about? Call my attorney. I said, my attorney in New York, Moshe Mortner, he formed the company. He has the EIN number. I said, before you put me in a cage, at least call my attorney. Okay? Right. So what do? They don't call him. I have a declaration from him. I'll be
pardoned?
Pardoned for the state one. There was no crime. But they had to do that. It's all documented. Again, I say that with absolute certainty.
But there is the part that I was like, just a pause.
They needed that time.
The part, what's amazing about it is, so I listened to this story, and I didn't tell Lenny about this, but I went home and looked at it, and I looked at all the articles. Yeah, and the only thing is, there's something about chandeliers.
No, that's all part of them dressing.
I understand this. I understand this, but.
But it starts with the state, though. Remember, the state.
But what did you do about it? Did you ever sue them? Did you ever communicate with anyone except this podcast?
That's the problem. When I tried to sue them, they were all going down, so they put me in jail. Don't you get that?
Yeah.
So where I'm going with this is, look, the bottom line is,
is
they took my life, okay, everything I'd worked my whole life for, and burned it down.
So
I caught him.
Let's see what he has.
Well, let me a couple things. It sounds like the short answer to the question I asked you is, did you feel like you were treated fairly? Is no.
Well, I have a lawsuit.
Which I think a lot of people probably.
I have a lawsuit against them that they beat the shit out of me in jail. That they're, in fact, 25 of them went to
prison.
But
let's not mix the two. Let's talk about
the treated fairly.
No, but no, I mean, look, case, it's all part of it. I think it's.
It wasn't even a case. It was a complete. They made it up.
I always think it's interesting to see it from another perspective.
So not only can you see it, I can give you the documents.
Yeah.
All right.
So the bottom line is, let's move on. But because that story is another day.
Wait. Let's not move on. Never got a chance, Ellie.
So let me hear what you say, because here's the thing.
It's interesting to hear. I mean, I assume you didn't have a trial, right? You ended up pleading guilty.
No. So here's the deal. This is on the Fed.
Either one.
Okay. So I'll tell you the Fed one, because the state one, is a different one. Now the Fed one, my attorneys are great attorneys, and so like I said, there's no fucking way, man, that we're going to trial, we're going to this, we're going to that.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at my two attorneys.
Yeah, I know, everyone starts that way.
And I'm looking at my attorneys and I'm looking at them, and it's a woman and a man, and like, I'm saying, I'm not feeling the love. Like, are you with me?
Right.
Are you with me? And they said,
pay the retainer.
I said, okay. I said, so out of 0 out of 10, what's my chance of winning? And she says, -1 million. I said, what?
-1 million.
She says, because they'll parade every person up there to make you out to be a monster. So I end up pleading guilty.
Yeah. Why did you plead guilty? Look,
because I would have won.
I never would have.
And by the way, and you know what she said? You know why? Because she said, granted, no one's ever been prosecuted for selling a piece of $800 furniture for bankruptcy fraud, but did you sell that piece of furniture? And so, I said, yes, I did.
Yeah, here's the thing. The vast majority of cases plead guilty, 90-something percent. It varies by state, it varies by federal, all that. But I mean, partially for some of the reasons Lenny's talking about, it's expensive to go to trial. You got to pay your lawyers. And it's a huge risk because if you go to trial and you lose, and the vast majority of people who are charged do lose at trial, you're going to get buried.
Right. And I did. And like she said, did you sell that piece of furniture?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it was $800 or $8 million.
Yeah, they told you can't
sell it. So ultimately, what was your sentence?
So here's the best part. So now it's sending to do the PSR. Part? It's the crazy part to do the PSR.
Yeah. And the terminology.
So with the feds, as you know,
resentencing report.
The feds, yep. They're pretty good. They stay with the guidelines.
Well, you would have been within the guidelines.
They
era,
go with
right?
the guidelines. Yeah. So the guidelines it comes. The PSR comes out 3 to 5 years. I'm like, oh my fucking.
That's
God.
Honestly, that's about what I would have guessed given
it's 3 to 5 because they spend so much money.
Yeah.
So we get.
But also the fraud guidelines are based on the amount.
So,
a lot.
So yeah. we get to my sentencing. And the judge, who I happen to be a great judge, okay, he's there. My attorney, she says, Your Honor, I was in front of you last week for a $500,000 fraud case. Mm-hmm. No criminal history, the same as this. This is a $200,000 fraud case, and you gave my client probation.
That's a good lawyer.
My client, because they don't like him, they want 5 years of his life. Yeah. So you know what the judge gives me?
What?
6 months.
Okay.
So,
that sounds proportionate.
That's unheard of, as you know.
It's so interesting seeing the phenomenon when a celebrity goes through.
We were just talking about it with Doc Gooden.
So
the bottom line though is again, like I said, the judge was smart enough to recognize that this was a part where they just didn't like
but
me.
What were you?
Of who I was.
What were you saying about the celebrity aspect of it?
I was going to say it can cut both ways, right.
Right?
I mean, when I was at the U.S. Attorney's Office, I started there just after Martha Stewart was prosecuted. While I was there, the office prosecuted Lil' Kim, the rapper. I think I said
yeah
that
for
wrong.
The shooting outside the studio.
Yeah, but she was charged with obstruction of justice because she was charged with lying to
right.
and convicted of lying to the grand jury. She wasn't part of the shooting.
6 months. You got 6
right.
months.
And I think the arguments go
both ways,
right?
Absolutely.
There is an argument. And Martha Stewart, to this day, I think probably maintains that if she wasn't a celebrity, they never would have gone after her. And Jim Comey, who was the U.S. attorney at the time, talks about this in his book. He said, I was very aware of this idea that I was celebrity hunting. On the other hand, there's a notion that sometimes celebrities get soft treatment.
Well, that's what happened
I mean,
for
look
me.
Look what's happened with the college admissions case. Right.
I was just going to bring that
right?
up.
So
what
some,
about these
some people
what,
are saying,
hold on. Let's talk yeah. about that for a second. What is your opinion, Ellie?
I don't think you can just say it's one or the other. I think I've seen examples both ways. I think there are some prosecutors who like the thrill of going after a celebrity, but I do think there are look. All
have
could,
you ever gone celebrity hunting?
I mean, John Gotti would be the most yeah. famous person, but he was famous for being in the mob. He wasn't famous for being a singer or a baseball player or something.
Yeah.
No, I've never really had a celebrity defendant in my case, but I'll just tell you, like you try really hard to treat everyone equal, regardless. Now I know that sounds naive and up in the clouds and all that, but it's interesting. I mean, it's interesting.
You're
I mean,
right.
It sounds like Lenny feels like he was picked out and picked on.
Yeah,
because
Lenny, what were you voted? What were you voted by the players of the other
baseball.
Teams? No. But talk about
voted
this for
the most
a
hated player in the league 5 years in a row.
So
that's an honor, though.
No, I know. But think
if
about
if they
this.
Like you, that means they make their job easy.
You know, you want to think that the justice is blind, but it's just humans that are making these decisions. When you see Lenny Dykstra doing all these things and you
but see
read
Ellie's
about
right
him.
Though because they went for the max on this and went 5 years and like my yeah. attorney said the judge saw through it because of who I was so
yeah.
that's why the judge went the other way because of me because I was a celebrity they wanted 5 years
right
a normal person they want like she said he got probation
mm-hmm.
so the judge gave me 6 months but he gave me 500 hours of time served
and so, what the judge did there is sounds like what judges should be doing is saying who is a similar defendant who committed a similar crime
right
and let me calibrate it maybe it's a little more serious a little less serious same thing but it sounds like you got
the judge
did
great
that.
And, yeah. and by the way but it was a community service because
right.
like I'm like well, waiting. You don't have to sit in the back room after you wait your attorneys have
yeah.
to tell you what happened. So I'm looking at them. They're like long faces and everything.
Ooh.
And I'm saying like, oh my God, like, did they change their, did the judge change his mind?
Right.
And he says, they say, no, but listen, you have to do 500 hours of community service. I said, I'm not even thinking about that. I'm saying like, I want to stick my tongue down your throat, but there's glass between us. I couldn't for 6 months, meaning, but she said, listen, if you violate they start your sentence over.
Yeah, probation.
It's serious business.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, I mean, it's a serious case, and I think we'll get back
but
to
we'll
it
get
when
back
we do
to
wrap
it.
Up. Tell me, while we have you here, and we have limited time, we always talk about, let me hear about some of the more interesting cases that you've had, some of the more wild cases, something you've tried. I know that a lot of times on CNN, people make you talk about the topics that they want to talk about. What are some of the most interesting things that you want to talk about that you haven't really exposed?
I'll give you my favorite single mob story. That I did, mob crime. So this is actually after Gotti. We had a case where the Genovese family, so there's five families in
what
New
year
York
is
City.
This
is, the case was in 2012. The Genovese family is one of the five families, and they're known within the mob as kind of the quote, Ivy League of the mob. That's said a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but they're the best organized of the five families.
How many known, just to get perspective, a lot of people don't actually understand the numbers.
Yeah.
How many known associates are there of the total Cosa Nostra of the five families?
There's five New York-based
New York, the tri-state
Cosa
area,
Nostra
still
families.
Still today?
Still five. Gambino, Genovese, let me see if I know. Gambino, Genovese, Lucchese, Colombo, Bonanno. Those are the five. And then there's Di Cavalcanti, which was kind of in Jersey.
Yeah,
but
that's
they've
the
kind
Sopranos.
Of, Yeah, loosely, right. So,
and
each,
total people.
Each family has about 150, give or take, made members.
Wow.
It's a little bigger for some. Genovese is a little
Jesus
bigger.
Christ,
some of the
big?
Others are a little smaller. But here's the thing. You can't just expand. You can't just decide we want to add 10 more, we want to add 15 more. Someone literally has to die, and then you make a replacement.
And that's it.
Yeah, we actually intercepted a couple times written lists. So the families have to circulate their lists. So at the end of the year, the family will write out, these four guys died, and we want to propose these four guys to get made.
Get the fuck
And everyone else has to look at those lists and go, no, this guy here is no good. His uncle's a cop. No, this guy here is no good. He owes us money. So it's like an approval process.
Then, and it's all the families involved or just
all
per
the
family?
All the families have to vet each other's members.
It's kind of like baseball.
Oh, wow.
Like free agency.
But that's, you
can't pick up on waivers
but
if there's
something
wrong.
Still going on.
It still goes on.
He has to pass waivers.
Someone literally has to die to get in.
Yeah,
so the Genovese family decides, you know, there's a lot of competition for the money here in New York and New Jersey. Why don't we open up a little franchise, so to speak, out in Springfield, Massachusetts, right? Known for the basketball, birthplace of basketball, right? It's where
Naismith
invented basketball. There's a little bit of mob activity out there. So they set up shop out there, a guy named Al Bruno.
11-12. This is 2011.
Yeah, the stuff happened in like 07, 08, but the case was in 11-12.
You say set up shop, what does that mean?
So they send Al Bruno.
What's the core of their business?
The core of their business, they send Al Bruno up, he's shaking people down, and he's doing loan sharking, right? And he's doing sports gambling, basically. But it's lucrative. He's making money. He's shaking down strip clubs.
Why Springfield, Mass?
Because they saw an opportunity, because there was low-level mob life there.
There was?
Yeah.
They literally look at it as like franchise and
Yeah, I don't actually know exactly what brought them out there, but the point, Al Bruno was doing well. They're making money. But guess it turns out a couple things. One, Al Bruno is skimming. You're supposed to send back your money. You'll get a cut of it, but as very often happens, he was pocketing a little bit.
It's almost
and
then like the Goodfellas then.
100%.
Go ahead.
Yes. And the other problem was Al Bruno was talking to the police on the side. Another thing that, by the way, a lot of them do.
Right.
Right.
Part of business.
Yeah, they're maybe not full cooperators. I mean, like in is it Goodfellas or something?
Yeah,
we all do this.
Yeah, spit a sandwich. You got to do what you got to do.
So they decide Al Bruno's got to go. So Artie Nigro, who becomes one of my defendants, boss, acting boss of the family at the time, he was filling in, I think he filled in for Chin Gigante or somebody who was dead or they had, he was the interim, like an interim manager, right?
CEO.
Yeah. Acting boss of the family, Artie Nigro says, we're killing him. We're taking him out. So Artie Nigro gives the order to this guy, Anthony Aralata, made guy, short little guy, ends up cooperating with us. Anthony Aralata goes up, he was sort of the go-between with Springfield, gets these two brothers, Fred and Ty Gias, Greek kids, but they can't get made. You have to be Sicilian or you have to be Italian to get made.
Right.
So the Giases are Greek. They can't get made, but they're tough. They're scary
they're
guys.
Associated with them.
Yep, the associates. So the Gias boys then go get this guy, Frankie Roach, R-O-C-H-E. They give him a gun. They tell him, you're gonna do this. And I think they pay him a few hundred or $1,000. I forget the detail. So Frankie Roach waits for Al Bruno outside his social club where he holds court. Al Bruno comes out. Frankie Roach jumps out from behind a soda machine, a Pepsi machine, and shoots him 8-9 times right in the gut, kills him. Okay? All right. Frankie Roach gets arrested. He flips. Frankie Roach tells us, well, the order came to me from the Gias boys and Anthony Aralata and a couple other guys were involved. We indict all those guys. Anthony Aralata flips. This is what happens, like dominoes.
It's all conspiracy.
So when you flip him, is this how it works? You say, either you tell me or you go to jail or I'll get someone else out.
In a nutshell, that's exactly what you just said.
Is the case any weaker that they murdered a known, like somebody that's not a good person and somebody that, you know, it's kind of like...
Yeah, I know what you're saying. It's harder to...
Like at the pawn shop, when a drill is taken from Home Depot, it's a big difference than like an old lady's rob.
It's harder to get a jury riled up about the murder of a mobster than the murder of a civilian, but it's still a human life and juries still understand murder, right?
Fear does a lot to a man. Prison does a lot.
Well, let's continue the story.
So Anthony Arilotta
flips. You're going up the chain. Yeah, you got Roach, you got the next guy.
Anthony Arilotta flips and he says... You guys got it all right on the Bruno murder. Like, yeah, it was Artie Nigro gave the order as the boss. I brought it up to Springfield. I got the Gius boys. The Gius boys got Frankie Roach. He goes, also, do you want me to tell you where Gary Westerman is? Now, I'm like, I don't know. That name
doesn't... Who the fuck is Gary
Westerman? Well, that was my reaction. But the FBI agents on the case were Massachusetts guys, Massachusetts-based agents. And they went, what? He's been missing 7 years. No one's seen him. He disappeared into thin air 7 years ago. Anthony Arilotta goes, oh, yeah, we killed him. We buried him in the woods. And I'll show you where if you want to know. So
what's his name?
So Gary Westerman. So here's the story. So Gary Westerman was, I guess you would call sort of a knockaround guy. He was not Maine. I don't think he was Italian. But he wanted to be a tough guy. So he hung around with the Gius boys.
250 hitter.
Yeah, 235 hitter maybe. Okay. So the problem with Westerman was they suspected him of talking to the cops as well. So they lure Westerman into the woods. They tell him, we're going to rob this marijuana dealer, right? The guy lives in that house. We're going to go through the woods in the back, and we're going to tase him. We're going to wear ski masks. We're going to tase him. We're going to zip tie him. We're going to steal his marijuana. We're going to steal his money.
Yeah.
Westerman is in. That's the kind of guy he was. They're out in the woods. They got the masks on. And then they turn their guns on Gary Westerman.
This is right out of Sopranos, man.
So, great. So Anthony's telling us the story. He goes, yeah, we shot him with like 22s and 27s. Something like
that. Shot him like 400 times.
Well, plays into the story. And Anthony goes, and he didn't die. Like the bullets seemed like they were bouncing off his head.
22.
So Arilotta goes, and again, this is all trial testimony. This is all public record. Anthony says, so me, and I think it was Emilio Fusco, who was another defendant in the case, grabbed shovels because we had dug the hole before, grabbed shovels and cracked him over the head and killed him that way. And then we pushed him into the hole and he sort of fell in head first. Okay. 7 years later, that's 2004. Now it's 2011. No one's seen Gary Westerman, but Anthony Arilotta says, I'll take you to the woods. I'll show you where. So you can get an order from a judge. Anthony Arilotta was in jail, but we got a takeout order. One permission from a judge to take the guy out for one day. So the FBI agents, I didn't physically go, but the FBI agents take him.
Did he flip for reduced time?
Oh, yeah.
He was already doing a time for an unrelated case.
No, he was locked up on our indictment. He was charged with murder.
Charged with murder.
Yeah, so you have to plead guilty to everything, but then you get reduced time if you tell us everything you know. So they take Anthony in a van up to Agawam, Massachusetts, which I guess is the next town over, a couple towns over from Springfield. And Anthony sort of walks him back into the woods, and he's like looking around, looking at the trees, and he's like, here, like dig right here. And then I'm getting texts from the FBI agents. They're going, well, there's 22 shells all over the place. So already we're like, oh.
And how long ago was the crime?
7 years. 7 years prior.
It's copper shells, and plus they probably unloaded 12 to 15 rounds per.
What a story, man.
So then they dig. And the way the FBI digs is they get a backhoe, and they dig 1 inch at a time. So they don't just scoop. They go 1 inch at a time. And they have like a huge, like a spaghetti colander, but like.
They sift them.
The size of like, well, I'll say this table, but for your viewers, 6 feet across. It's like a gigantic spaghetti colander. And the backhoe takes an inch of dirt and then dumps it through because everything that comes through is evidence. Could be shells, could be who knows. So then I'm getting emails through the day. And remember, Anthony said, we pushed him in and he sort of toppled in head first. So first it's like first inch, nothing. Second inch, nothing. Third inch, it's like.
A finger.
No, two sneakers. Tops and bottoms of two sneakers, because head first. Then, two, and it was Nikes. I was like, two Nikes. Oh, two shin bones, two ankles, two shin bones, two knees, they got him. And it was 7 years later, and it was exactly as Anthony said, down to the point of when we had him forensically examined, the examiner said, he had non-penetrating bullet wounds to his head, but he had a deep crack right down the middle. I mean, that was essentially what.
So that was the only thing left of him was his skull and his bones?
No, the whole body was there. Yeah, the whole body. But he was still, the body still had the ski mask on. He still had the taser in his pocket.
Did he like wake up? Oh, was he like, was he still not dead?
That would have been
He's just like, oh, you fuckers. So you should have brought bigger shovels.
For 7 years?
Well, the body had decomposed pretty badly, but the skeleton was pristine.
So what, if you don't mind me asking, how much time did this guy end up doing by basically selling out?
Yeah, it's a good question.
The only people that have ever loved him and took care of him for the better part of his entire adult life, he flushed down the toilet because of his fuck-ups.
Let me tell you the postscript to this. So Anthony Arilotta pleads guilty. He's a cooperator. Frankie Roach pleads guilty as a cooperator. A testifying witness. But we end up trying Artie Nigro and the two Gius boys on those murders and a couple of there was a guy, a union guy, who they had a problem with.
Gius boys probably go fuck yourself, right?
Yes.
So you could tell them right away from the story.
Another great aspect of this story, an attempted murder, by the way, is they shot a guy 9 times who lived and he testified for us. He didn't know who did it. He just said two white guys came up to my car and shot me 9 times.
Well, that's the real nails right there.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the real nails.
Well, he still got some of them in him too.
Yeah.
Was the guy that shot, was he black?
No, both shooters were white guys. Gius boys.
I like when white people identify other people that do crime.
Everyone involved in this case was a white person.
No, but I like it because it's always like, the story's whatever, and it's like, oh, two black guys came up.
No, well, we asked him. We said, describe the people.
We said, describe the people, and he said,
all I could tell you is it was like two white guys.
It's funny because they're Greek, so they're probably like generic white dudes.
Hold on. There's a button on it. There's a button on it. So we try Artie Nigro. We try Fred and Ty Gius. They all get convicted. They all get life. And then you remember about a year ago, Whitey Bulger was killed in jail?
Yeah.
So the news story said guy who did it was Freddie Gius.
Of course. Oh my God. Of course. The guy that
was
like,
in there because
so tough. He probably lives his entire life with the insecurity that nobody will have him as a mobster.
Well, so
all he wants to do is like be made. And because he can't, he's just like this pent up rage.
Freddie Gius was a real tough kid. I would say a kid. I would guess he's around 50 now.
We got to get him on the podcast.
He's doing life, and he's now in Supermax, I'm sure.
What did he get, like 6-minute calls a day, one shower a week?
So the Gius boy, the newspapers reported Freddie Gius did it. That day, my phone blew up. My friends from the prosecutor's office were like, isn't this
your
guy?
You got to give him credit, though.
Ellie, like,
he's still kept to his principles. And he's a Massachusetts guy.
He's a Massachusetts guy.
Yeah, they're all Massachusetts guys, so it don't make sense.
Were
they all in Walpole?
I'll say this. Yeah, I mean, that's gosh, I mean, I've done other murders. Yeah,
something that came up I've always wanted to ask.
Yeah.
What is the validity behind the witness protection program?
Okay. So the witness protection program. The witness protection program is really called WITSEC, witness security.
Because I love My Blue Heaven. I love Henry Hill stories. Yeah. Give me the lowdown.
I've spent a lot of time with guys in WITSEC. So what happens is there's in prison WITSEC where you go into a special area separate from everybody else so you don't get killed in prison.
No.
And then there's out of WITSEC where they're out of prison where they relocate you.
Oh, okay, okay. Yeah. I don't give a shit about being in prison and getting special treatment.
So
a honey bun in 2 minutes outside is not like something.
So I spent a lot of time with guys who were in WITSEC. And they relocate you.
Yes, that's the one I want to know.
Yeah, they move you to these other states.
How much do they get a week? How much do you get a week?
I don't know the answer. Yeah, they'll change your name. They'll get to help you try to get work. But here's the problem.
They all fuck it up.
Yes. The problem is, so WITSEC likes to brag that they've never lost someone, had someone killed while in WITSEC, which I think is probably true, maybe still true. The problem is when it comes to the mob guys, they can't keep any of them because the rules are so restrictive. You can't even go back to Brooklyn. You can't even call back to Queens. I had a guy who was thrown out of WITSEC because he got caught going to a wedding in Queens, and they told him, we caught you going to a wedding. This is a warning. So and he responded, he said, I'm going to do it again, so you might as well throw me out.
So they
now.
Just release you, right?
They throw you out, but they don't take away. Here's the thing. They give you your new identity. They help you try to get set up. But it's a crazy thing because when you need to meet with these guys, they will send you to a third location. So let's say I'm in Jersey, New York. Let's say the guy's been relocated. I don't know where they relocated.
Des Moines, Iowa.
Right, but they pick a third location and they tell you like the day before. It's like very cloak and dagger. You're going to go to Topeka, whatever. And then you spend like days and days with these guys in the Days Inn, residential Days Inn.
Rick Moranis.
Yeah, and then there's a marshal there providing security.
So what do you do with them for those days?
You debrief them. You interview them. You get them ready for trial. But the thing is, you end up in these bizarre situations like you've been debriefing for 3 days and you're tired of just like bringing in sandwiches and you're just like, there's a Fridays around the corner. Let's just go.
and you end up becoming a relationship.
Yeah, and you're sitting in there with
losers.
So-and-so from Queens who's usually ordering chicken fingers at the TGI Fridays, and in Kansas or something.
Yeah.
But it is definitely a fish out of water
surreal.
Thing.
Yeah,
but
what a life you live.
But what is what is that? Crazy. Is that the equivalent of like the mobster gold watch retirement package?
No, there is no gold watch retirement. Well, you're not allowed to leave.
No, of course not. I'm just saying, like when you're weighing your options versus what it is. But you don't know how much they
make. There's no leaving. There's no quitting. I mean, the guys who are successful make a ton. Although I will say, I think—
Successful? What do you mean? At snitching? Professional snitches?
No. The guys who stay in the mob and have good rackets make a lot of money.
Sure.
The guys,
you're saying crime does pay.
No. I'm saying for the—
I don't understand.
I'm saying for a very select few it pays.
Very select few,
and
right.
a decreasing amount because— yeah. They're losing ground.
Internet.
Well, the big one is sports gambling, right? They used to make a ton of money off sports gambling. Now you do it on the internet.
Yeah.
Now you do it. Now it's legal in several states. So why are you going to bet with the mob if you can just go online here in Jersey, right? But what I'm saying is the cooperators, once you cooperate, obviously your life's never the same. You get relocated. You're in danger the rest
Does
of your
everybody,
life.
Does everybody, do you pay for everybody to get relocated? Wives, dogs?
Yes.
What do you do with dogs? How do you treat dogs?
You pay for people.
Have you had a dog?
Okay, we're down to the dogs.
I'm sure we have.
Sensitive thugs, they all
I'm
need
sure
hugs.
I'm sure we
I
have.
I promise Ellie we go to some baseball.
We promise baseball. All right. Ellie, this part of the segment.
All day.
Because he's got the baseball.
Well, the mob is the interesting part
of
it. That's
I could go all day too. That's why I had to stop. I wanted it. It's like the movies.
Well, it's a very relevant topic, and I think that...
And you were in it, man, right?
Lenny,
yeah,
you
no,
make a
we
lot
lived
of,
it. We
you make
it.
A lot of comments about the law and stuff like that, and while we have him here, I figure we ask the rest
it's
of...
It's just amazing that this stuff's
rest
real.
Of questions.
It's all real.
So, before we wrap this up...
He's got some great baseball
stuff. Do you have any questions you want to ask Lenny?
I have a question. So, here's a question for you, Lenny. If there was a battle between my all-time least favorite team, not a battle, a World Series, seven-game series, my all-time least favorite team, the 86 Mets, and my all-time favorite team, the 93 Phillies... You got to play both ways. Who wins?
86 Mets.
Oh, I knew it.
Yeah, you know why?
Lenny, why?
You know
That's
why?
A powerful team.
No, because 93 the 93 Phillies, we had four guys that walked 100 times. We did we didn't have the pitching. The pitching
That's true.
With Gooden and with the other starting pitching. We had, and then you have, Roscoe closing. Plus, we had just enough veterans and just enough young guys where there's so much chemistry.
Yeah.
And so the 86 team wins. The 93 team, we were picked last.
Yeah, that team came out of nowhere.
Well, it came out of nowhere because I took this stuff called Decadura balling. Okay?
Yeah.
And, which wasn't illegal, by the way.
Right. Well, they didn't know nothing was illegal back then. Right.
Except, and then I told my teammates, if you want to play in this team, you got to take it too. And you got to take it too. And you got to take it too.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, like no one wants to play us. We go, we knock off the Braves.
Do you guys have like ears falling off and like your hair is coming out, but you're hitting like 400
Listen,
home runs?
The bottom line is we flipped Philadelphia upside
down.
Oh
my God. Do I remember that?
I mean, 3.7 million people.
Ooh, yeah.
And that people today, and correct me if I'm wrong, will say that was the most exciting year in Philadelphia sports that year.
Oh my God. I mean, it was
awesome.
Incredible. So 93 Phils. Who was the guy who gets not enough credit off that team? Who was the guy that got underrated off that
Lenny
team?
Lenny Dykstra.
I broke every record there is. I'll tell you what. The guy that's probably the most underrated that didn't get the credit that he deserved there. Probably a guy like Mel Thompson.
Yeah, I remember. He made a great catch. He won a game.
Mel
went over
Thompson,
the wall for you guys.
Right.
Won
Mel
a game
Thompson.
Early on.
Jim Eisenreich.
Yeah. Good
Jim
hit.
Eisenreich,
yeah.
Who had Tourette's syndrome.
Yep.
And that was just a great cast of characters.
A lot of guys had their career years at the same time.
So I want to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Okay, so in the history of baseball, because this is somebody that you're going to have a hard time guessing.
All right.
History's a long time, right?
Yeah,
that means that dude that like came here and thought the earth was... Like,
I know
flat.
A lot about the post-Jackie Robinson era, but when you get into like 1880s crap...
Whatever, like the history, whatever. So,
okay, yeah.
So only one left-handed hitter
okay.
can say he went to the plate more times during a season in the history of baseball than any other left-handed hitter during a season.
All right.
Okay.
Not you, though.
I don't know. You have to...
Okay.
You have
to so the most...
All
I mean, yeah, I'm talking about Ty Cobb. I'm talking about you go all the way back.
Ron Darling lied.
Right.
So what I'm trying to say is, in the history of baseball, meaning like...
What lefty had the most plate appearances in one season?
And he also did something else, this guy. He led the league in walks and at bats, which is the first time it's ever... It's impossible, isn't it?
That's
mathematically
hard to do.
Impossible.
That's hard to do. So my first guess, but I'm not going to say it because he didn't walk too much, was Rod Carew.
I love Rodgers. He's my favorite player.
Is that right?
No, that's wrong.
He was
wrong.
A Jew.
That's wrong.
He was and probably still is, right?
That's
Remember,
wrong.
Didn't pass it?
No, no, but Rod, keep going. Rodgers is wrong.
I'm not going to say you, but I think it is you. But let me.
Is me.
Ah. It is
me. Okay, because you know
all
what?
Roads.
So did you know that, because I wanted to give you this stat. Yeah. Did you know that Lenny Dykstra in the 1993 season led the, because I have to prove it, the entire National League in on-base percentage, hits, at-bats, runs scored, base on balls, times on base, set the record for most
Did you know
plate
that
appearances.
Lenny was the first person to fire his agent in baseball?
No. No. I was just, let me finish this. Most plate appearances in the season by a left-hander, 773, a mark that still stands.
A busy season, yeah.
And is the most in Major League Baseball history.
Wow.
And by the way, this picture was taken like 2 weeks ago.
Oh my God!
Where's our cameraman?
Wait, I got one last question for you.
Cameraman's gone. Where's the cameraman?
One last question for you, Lenny. So I looked this up for '93. I thought, okay, if you win the MVP, you finished second.
Yeah. Well,
who should have won it? You or who won it? You guys know?
No,
who
Bonds
he knows.
Won it.
Barry Bonds.
And by the way, you know who showed Bonds how to do steroids, right?
No, who?
Me.
Was it there Pittsburgh? Was he on San Francisco?
No,
San Francisco.
He just, well, he hit
his
a bunch
first
of
year
runs.
In San Francisco.
I think it was.
Right?
I think he just. I think it said San Francisco.
Yeah,
right?
Frisco. I got fucked at MVP that year, but I don't. But I don't. But you know what?
Bonds had like 40 stolen bases.
It was all about home runs.
Or 30.
He just hit 40 something.
Canseco's the only 40-40.
No, there's a bunch of them since.
There is
A-Rod.
But let me tell you one record about Bonds. Yeah. This is how good this guy was. Like if you put Barry Bonds down, you would define him this way: best player in the history of baseball.
Right.
Biggest dick in the history of baseball. But
no, you said. I thought you said Sopel has the biggest dick.
No. The biggest.
Oh, I thought you meant he is.
No,
I know.
The biggest.
Yeah.
So, I led the league in walks twice. Yep. 120, 118. This guy, when he's doing something, walked 287 times.
Who, Barry Bonds?
That's astonishing.
287 times.
But Lenny, they didn't.
80 intentional.
When you were in your heyday, they didn't. That was before all the advanced stats. Like, people didn't appreciate on base and walks when you played.
Right.
So,
well, Billy Bean did. And
yeah,
wrote that
was
book
years
out.
Later.
Wrote that book
right.
After,
but now everyone looks for that. But,
yeah,
but
now they're
all
striking out more than ever. But
you guys remember
but
Barry
that,
Bonds'
that,
cross earring?
Sure.
Was the worst.
Of course.
But see,
that
was
the very
worst.
90s. Yeah. Very 90s.
Let me ask your opinion.
Like, he needs like a rat tail.
Why, how can the three best players in the history of baseball not be in the Hall of Fame?
So you're talking,
Rose, Clemens,
and Bonds, and maybe A-Rod, right?
Yeah,
A-Rod won't make it. Yeah,
yeah. It's such a. Here's the thing, I think ultimately, history will soften up as the years go by. You can already see it. Clemens and Bonds numbers.
But
are
Rose
rising.
Is never going to go.
Rose is a different story. But it depends what you see the Hall of Fame as. If you see it as the Hall of Pure, there's racists in there.
There you go.
There's horrible people
What's
in there.
What's the threshold?
Right. Look, there's not. I'm not about to defend the Hall of Fame as
no,
being
right.
anything.
Well, we had Doc Gooden
going
on
consistent.
Here, and we were just before you came in, we were talking about how
he has the numbers.
Know, is it a judgment thing?
He has the numbers.
Or is it a numbers thing? Or
right.
Whatever? And I said, just like, you know, every contrarian, every talking head says, well, it's about how dominant you were in the period that you played. You
right,
know, I did the whole thing.
Right.
And it was 8 years, 86, 92.
No, but the numbers.
He owned it.
The numbers.
What is your, Ellie, what is your opinion? Are you trying to appeal to an 8-year-old fan who you don't want to say that doing coke or whatever is bad? Or are you talking about
But it's okay
the
to be your wife?
Game? No,
yeah,
I want to hear
well,
your
Well, here's
opinion.
The problem with trying to enforce sort of morality.
Exactly.
Is you got to do it across the board or not at all, and it's already compromised, right?
Exactly.
If you got Ty Cobb in there, I'm sure other
he wore,
really
he was
bad
a,
guys.
He was in the Ku Klux Klan.
I mean, look, and not to put too fine, but
that's
like,
what Oil Can Boyd said, by the way.
I have no idea, but like, look, Gaylord Perry bragged about cheating, right? He
and
bragged about
they all
about
took amphetamines.
Balls.
Everyone took
well,
amphetamines.
Well, people have been using substances, so there's
so
not
the
a lot.
Threshold?
So to me, you got to make one decision or the other.
He's
decision
so right.
Decision A is it's just about on-field performance. That's that. And if someone did something bad, we'll put it on the plaque and we'll use it educationally. And decision B is it's going to be a moral thing,
yeah,
and then we're going to have to throw some people out.
Have two
you,
Hall
you
of
have,
Fames. Make a good guy
Ellie,
Hall
you
of
have,
Fame and a guy that got the best numbers.
Right, there you go.
You have kids?
Yeah,
it's great.
Well, and we tell them. I mean, I explain the whole steroids thing. That guy, you know.
I always wonder when I hear names. You know, I'm sure he's a great player. I'm sure there's a very immature side of me coming out. But I always wonder what parents are thinking when they name their kids like Gaylord. You know, I think that there's certain names in there that just like, I know they might have been popular back then and this and that, but there's just, there's
Gaylord
something.
Perry was a was a great pitcher for a long time, but he admitted he threw spitballs,
all that shit on him.
Yeah. I got to tell you, Ellie, man. This
Why, was
he
in, is Gaylord Perry in the Hall of Fame?
Awesome, awesome time. I learned so much in this interview.
Thank you so much.
Because, no, the fact that this stuff is real.
It's real.
Like you see it in the movies, the Goodfellas, but you did it. You put these people away.
It is real.
So
it
we learned, real. We we have Ellie really Honig here from CNN, and we learned a lot about this. And
awesome, man.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening in. Segment brought to you by Perfect Pawn and Daniel,
Ellie Honig,
Lenny,
man. Wow.
Jamie, and Ellie out. Thank
Thanks,
you so much, guys.
Thank you.
All right. Today we had Ellie Honig in the studio. Jamie, what did you find the most fascinating about him?
All the...
the mob shit,
mob
right?
stuff, yeah.
So Jamie liked
I really
him.
Loved
she liked
it.
The way
I
he looked,
I could have listened
too.
To that for hours. Yeah. Yeah.
So we had Ellie and...
Ellie Honig was awesome.
He was awesome.
Awesome.
Very interesting stuff about...
just unbelievable.
Witness protection program. A real interesting history he's had.
Just amazing.
In the legal system. It's really amazing.
Real. Oh,
and he got thrown into it so young.
You know what I liked about him? You know what I really liked about him? I think a lot of people that are in law enforcement, especially prosecutors that have made something with themselves, they take themselves very seriously. And you know what I liked about him? I liked that he was just like, dude, it is what it is. Yeah. You know, we were doing the witness protection, and then we had some chilies, and then eventually they're just a human being.
Chicken nuggets.
And the fact he saved...
And I don't think that another thing is
not using the PowerPoint.
Yeah, he doesn't. I think he was intelligent enough to know, like, okay, I'm here, but this is not high school. I'm not peaking here. This isn't like the greatest thing of my life.
Right.
Where a lot of people that go into such a position of power, and when you look at him and doing the media thing, that's what the guy wants to do.
You know, he was fascinating because, like, you see that in the movies, but I really didn't know that's still real.
No. And he's also, I see why CNN likes him. I mean, he's very digestible.
Very digestible. Very well spoken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, Ellie had a very interesting take. He's from Camden, so he was a Philly fan. So obviously, he wanted to get your take on this. And like I said, I think that the mob thing was interesting. But what's more interesting is the witness protection part of it.
Yeah, you like that.
And just how chill he is. About how it's just a job, it's nothing more. I work really hard. Yeah. I work as hard as the next guy. And he was honest. He's doing political stuff. And I said it a couple of sentences back. A lot of people peak in the prosecutor's office.
There was
this
no,
is as good
no
as it gets.
Feeling I'm better than.
Yeah. Well, maybe when he was. When,
I'm talking
when
about
he
right
was,
now today, though.
Yeah.
I think that he just recognizes that it's nothing more than a phase of his life. Like I said. You go back to your house, your hometown, you have the assholes you went to high school with, you know, you're 35 years old, they're probably working for their father's business, and it's because they peaked in high school, and they're never able to get back to that position of power. He doesn't look like someone that, like, is holding on to that power.
You know
power.
What was real interesting,
he likes
too?
To teach, he likes to show.
Yeah, you know what was really interesting is no fear. Remember, like, so when he made sense, when I said, aren't you afraid that they'd gun you down? But then they're gunning down the whole police force, meaning they're opening up doors they don't want to open because there's another prosecutor, like you said, another one.
Yeah, I didn't want to say anything, but it's the same thing as flying in an airplane. Yeah, it'll crash, but you look at the amount of prosecutors that have prosecuted serious mobsters and the percentage of them getting killed. I think that normal people will get killed at a higher rate than a prosecutor getting killed by a mobster.
Right.
The other thing is, when you talk about organized crime, a big part of it is the word organized.
Yes.
I don't think the very nature of organization means that the person doing the dirt will affect the person that's leading it if you affect factors that are outside of the rules that he said.
This is great.
You think he gets Christmas cards?
You think he gets Christmas? Well, he's Jewish.
Well, he's
getting
holiday
Hanukkah.
Cards.
Well, you know what they call him.
Is he getting Christmas cards?
No, what they call him.
I think that he's one of those guys that they probably put a picture of and
Hot
throw darts
Honig.
At.
Hotshot Honig. That's who they get. The Gotti family call him Hotshot Honig.
I think that's nothing more than a figurehead. I mean, people that go into that industry, they know what it is. They know the rules. And it was just very refreshing to hear
amazing.
Some honesty. We got to get him. You know what we should do? The next time that we have any type of like legal questions or something like that, or so we should just give him a call.
I don't know if we can pay him like CNN does. Though.
I don't think we need to pay him. I think
we just call him.
Or and then just ask him a question.
I mean, he's a nice guy, but looks like he carried away.
Well, we have Ellie Honig's representative, Ellie Honig's representative.
Don't put that pressure on me, man.
I know. We're not Lenny. We're very excited. Lenny, who do we have for next week?
Well, I might now that we've been talking about it, I might bring Soulpole.
I think we should bring him. He'll be great.
I think we should.
Hey, but I mean, I'm talking about.
I'll have my camera ready.
I'm talking. Like Dan dropped the fucking thing.
So excited! I got so
excited thinking about
it. Actually, Soulpole's not going to be next week, but he will be here in flesh and in person.
And
without even noticing, you can't help but notice. It's because you know, dude. Where does it go? It goes down his leg.
Are we just gonna? You know what we should do instead of we should have like a bar chair for him, like raised up facing Jamie,
like, by the way,
and just like make it extremely hot in here, not
great,
cold.
Great guy, like, by the way. What? Great guy. Another guy like Doc. Great guy. He's a preacher now. Okay, meaning he really is living the life that I live. Me and him, we're all.
You're a preacher, yeah. You preach to me every fucking day.
Yeah, well, I sell.
And you sell. You're always too. You're always they selling sell. Yourself.
They try to get you to put the money in the basket. See.
Like in Silence of the Lambs?
I was thinking the same thing.
Put the lotion in the basket.
The way Lenny says it.
Put the fucking lotion in the basket.
Put the fucking lotion in the basket.
No.
Actually Lenny doing Buffalo Bill perfectly.
Kind of, it was. So everyone's selling. Ellie was selling. When he gets in front of a jury, he's selling those 12 people better, hopefully, than the other guy.
I don't think he'll ever go in front of a jury.
Huh? No, I'm saying when he did.
Yeah.
But I'm saying we're all selling. Like, we're selling this show for people to listen to our channel.
On that note, let's talk about our sponsor, Perfect Pawn, who has been sponsoring. And we're actually looking for an additional sponsor.
We have a couple ready to show up.
We have a few, but if you have more money than the ones. We are interested in the most amount of money that someone's willing to offer us, not the first few. So if you have an original concept or a business that you want to advertise with Pawning Nails, please shoot us an email at info@pawningnails.com.
It's in a real pawn shop.
It is. It's in a real pawn shop. In a little, probably next week, we'll do an origin story because I think everyone was a little bit tired. We had a really long.
All right, so stay tuned. Next week, we have
Anthony Scaramucci.
The Mooch.
Who's turned on Trump in a big way.
On that note, we're wrapping it up. Thank you for Ellie. Thank you, Jamie. Thank you, Bart. Thank you, Nathaniel.
Nathaniel, my man.
Our engineer. And Lenny, go fuck yourself.
Okay, I love it.
Pawning Nails out!
I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.